Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. For many people working to address the problems of racial and economic inequality, working to heal the divisions exposed in Baltimore's 2015 uprising, their search for solutions is informed by their religious faith. But in a city as diverse as ours, how can people of many different faiths and cultures bridge those differences in a common quest for a just society and for greater equality? Today, another installment of Living Questions, our monthly look at the role of religion in the public sphere, will meet three community activists who led a series of interfaith dialogues over the past 4 months, organized around the theme of imagining justice in Baltimore. Living Questions on Midday, right after these headlines. And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Midday. I'm glad you're with us. I'm Tom Hall. Today, it's another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Following the riots and uprising in April of last year that tore the city apart, both literally and figuratively, the ICJS embarked on a two-part project that they called Imagining Justice in Baltimore. The first part consisted of three lectures delivered earlier this year by religious scholars from outside of the city. Dr. Robert Franklin from Emory University in Atlanta offered the Christian perspective. Dr. Mark Gopin of George Mason University offered the Jewish perspective. And Dr. Najiba Saeed of the Claremont School of Theology in California considered the notion of justice from the Muslim perspective. The second part of the Imagining Justice initiative comprised a series of community conversations led by local activists and community leaders. There were four of these events, once a month, beginning in September. The first was held at St. Bernardine's Catholic Church on Edmondson Avenue, another at the Islamic Society of Baltimore, and another at Coppin State University. The final one took place just last Thursday at Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill. After the death of Freddie Gray, a lot of groups and institutions held panels and discussions to explore why the uprising took place and what could be done to eliminate the underlying reasons that led to it. Dr. Sherry Parks oversaw a series at the University of Maryland. Dr. K. Wise Whitehead did a similar thing at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, and several others assembled folks to talk and reflect on the cataclysmic violence and a way forward. The ICJS series of community conversations focused not only on justice and how it can or could be imagined for our city, it also challenged people to think about how religion can and could inform our understanding of what happened and how we should approach solutions to the multitude of underlying problems that plague Baltimore and cities across the United States. So today on this edition of Living Questions, my guests are three of the community leaders who helped facilitate the community conversations. Karim Amin is the president of the Muslim Social Services Agency, a nonprofit that provides resources and food to underserved residents of Baltimore City. He has served in AmeriCorps. He's taught special education in Baltimore City Public Schools. He's been a treatment counselor for youth with emotional disabilities and a domestic program coordinator for Islamic Relief USA. Welcome to the show, Karim Amin.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Tracy Guy Decker is the associate director at the Jewish Museum here in Baltimore. She and her family belong to Baltimore Hebrew Congregation, and since the uprising, she's been active in that congregation's social justice efforts. Welcome to the show as well.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. He works with city residents as well as political, corporate, and philanthropic leaders to address issues facing people in distressed communities. Terrell taught for several years in the Baltimore City Schools and in the Education Department at Johns Hopkins University, where he supported educators in the master's program for Teach for America. Terrell Williams, welcome as well.
Thank you so much.
And you are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Terrell, let me start with you. Each of you wrote a piece in the Huffington Post about your experience in these community conversations. And your piece alluded to the fact that before you got involved in it, you were somewhat skeptical about its validity, its usefulness, its capacity for success. Describe what that skepticism was about, and then what you ultimately ended up thinking about the process.
Well, I think it came out of this whole idea that I've always had of religion of being divisive. I have always seen religions as a divisive force in the public sphere. And when someone, one of my colleagues came to me and said, you know, I really think you should be a part of this conversation. And when I found out it had this religious tinge, I'm like, why would she ask me? She said, you know, I think you should try it. And I tried it. And let me say that, you know, I better understand the difference between the theory of religion and the practice of religion, and understand that sometimes society follows what one believes and maybe not what the real religion speaks to. And this dialogue has really taught me about the importance of really looking into things and not stereotyping, which I fight against every single day in my work.
Sure, sure. And Tracy, is that do you have a similar take to that? I mean, in terms of stereotypes about different religions and religious perspectives on the notion of justice, I mean, do we have somewhat, you know, ossified or preconceived notions of how Muslims think about it or Jews or Christians think about it?
Undoubtedly, yes. I mean, I think we have preconceived notions about everything, but in particular, where religion comes, it's a lot easier to slap a label on something and then dismiss it than to actually look more carefully and figure out what it is that you're looking at.
And did these conversations help you do that?
You know, what they really helped me to do was to accept my religious drive as being a legitimate place in the public sphere. There's so much religion comes in a phobia in the public sphere, where people will plaster over their stereotyping with religiosity, that I was very loath to speak up as a religious person in the public sphere. It seemed to me that social action and my religious fervor should be two separate things that should not. They should not work together at the same time. And working with folks like the two men on either side of me and all of the other community leaders who bring their God talk, who bring their religious texts, like, with them on the road to activism, and are getting things done and are doing it for what I believe are the right reasons. Like, it really opened up a space for me to let those two selves be in the same place at the same time.
And Karim, I mean, we hear all the time, you know, in polite company, the two subjects you should always avoid are politics and religion. You know, we've just Absolutely. All survived Thanksgiving, and sometimes a lot of people think, oh, yeah, the two things, talk about anything else, talk Absolutely. About Aunt Bessie's pumpkin pie, but please, Lord, don't talk about the election.
Right.
I mean, what is your take, having been through this process now, on the role of religion in the public sphere? I mean, what can religion tell us, and how can it help us inform our notion of a way forward in a city that is broken in so many ways?
Right. I think religion is very, very integral in politics and in our society. Many people say, well, we need to separate church and state, but I don't believe that, because without Islam, you would not have an America. Without Christianity, you would not have an America. Without Judaism, you would not have America, because at the very basis of our Constitution and our declarations of independence were a lot of religious texts, and it came from that. Thomas Jefferson had a Quran that he used for inspiration. And so I believe to separate those two things are really, it's something you absolutely cannot do. You talked earlier, Tom.
I mean, they're separated constitutionally.
Yeah, they are.
But practically, it's not in our best interest. Is that what you're saying? It's not in our best interest to do our best to keep these
it's
two things.
Absolutely it's not. Because to do that, I think, would really bring our country backwards. Because we are a country of people with individuals in different faiths, but those faiths affect our practice. Me being involved in social services has to do with why I am a Muslim. Because in Islam, it says, stand up for what is right, even if it is against yourself. And so in these conversations that we had, we saw how all of our religious texts actually have a lot more in common, and that we can actually utilize it to help to push forward a lot of positive social justice changes if we use religion in that way. When we use it to divide or to demonize someone, we were talking earlier about how right now our president-elect earlier, he proposed identification for Muslims, which, as we know, is a part of the steps towards genocide. And what we need to do is we need to start looking to at that not as just Muslims, but as Christian and just as Jewish people, as people that may be agnostics, and start looking at those texts together and say we cannot allow this, these things and these ideas to move forward, but not in a combative way, but in a way where we educate each other. And these conversations allowed us to share our common thoughts and values.
On 88.1, it's Living Questions here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Karim Amin, who's the president of the Muslim Social Services Agency, Tracy Guy Decker, who's the associate director at the Jewish Museum in Baltimore, and Terrell Williams, who's an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. These three folks were community leaders in a series of conversations sponsored by the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies that took place in September, October, November, and just last week here in December. So, Terrell Williams, two of these conversations took place before the election. Two of them took place after the election. I can imagine that the election, I mean, Karim just alluded to President-elect Trump and his very divisive and many people would characterize as bigoted rhetoric in the campaign. I would imagine that the election loomed large in these conversations that you're having about in these interfaith dialogues. Is that a good guess?
Absolutely, they did. Absolutely. And I think that the one thing I really came away with, and I think the many discussions that I had with people at the table, was that, you know, this thing called justice should be a way of being. It should not be an episode in our life, you know, where Trump President Obama or whomever may be president of our country, we must look at it in a way of, is it just? It is not for white men, or it's not for black men, it's not for women. It is for people who believe in something great. And that greatness should be filled in that thing called justice. And if we're not just, being unjust to one in a country like ours is being unjust to all, because as Tracy and I and Karim talked about a little earlier, you know, there's this thing that suggests if something is hurting the least of us, it hurts all of us. And if we're not a just nation that looks out for a Freddie Gray and says to a police department that is unfair, is un-American, and it is wrong, and we push the full fervor of American people behind it, then things change. Those kinds of things don't happen in our country, because we stand up. We say we stand up as a light, a beacon. And the only way we can do that is to make sure we have a country that is just for each and every one of us. I have to speak up for women, for gay people, for Jews, for Muslims. I have to if I'm just. I can't be just and only speak up for black people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Tracy, I mean, was there, I understand from the preparatory materials that you all were given and the little training you all got before you led these conversations, that consensus wasn't necessarily the goal.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
If consensus isn't the goal, what was the goal?
Well, I think, I don't know what our ICJS colleagues would say, but I would say empathy was the goal, right? I think Karim pointed to the fact that there are a lot of similarities in our text, which is true, but there are also differences. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really admire about the organizers at ICJS is they sort of say, like, that's okay. Right. This is not about papering over our differences. It's about examining them and sort of saying, okay, well, what does that mean, and how do we get forward despite or maybe because of the differences? And I think that was that's hard. That's really hard work. It's much easier to say, well, here's how we're similar, so let's forget about everything else. It's much, much harder to say, yes, we are similar, but we are also different, mm-hmm. and we can still work together, and we can still find common ground. And that, I think, is empathy. And ultimately, that is the goal of all of the work that we've done together.
Yeah, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about those differences, because you all explored not only the differences between the three Abrahamic religions, Muslim, Jewish, Christian identities, but also between Shia and Sunni, between conservative and Orthodox, between Baptists and Catholics, I mean, between the interfaith differences, which are fascinating as well. Tracy Guy Decker, Terrell Williams, and Karim Amin served as community leaders in the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies series of community conversations this fall around the theme of imagining justice in Baltimore. It's Living Questions here on Midday, our monthly series exploring the role of religion in the public sphere. I'm Tom Hall. We welcome your questions and comments. We'd love to hear from some folks who were involved in some of these community conversations. Our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Glad you're with us. Stick around. Back to this edition of Living Questions here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Tube Talk here on Midday. Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Krempel join me with a look for what's on TV that deserves our interest and attention, and I hope you'll join us and weigh in on your favorite shows. There's lots of good stuff on TV these days, and we look forward to chatting amiably about it tomorrow afternoon on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's Living Questions, our monthly series in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. Today, we're talking with three community leaders who led a series of community conversations around the theme of imagining justice in Baltimore. Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Karim Amin is the president of the Muslim Social Services Agency, a nonprofit that provides resources to underserved residents of Baltimore City. And Tracy Guy Decker is the associate director at the Jewish Museum here in Baltimore. So how do you imagine justice in our city? 410-662-8780 is our phone number, our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So, Karim, I mean, I'm interested that ICJS, the Institute, put together a list of possible obstacles to interreligious dialogue. And they include, number one, the fear that someone will try to convert you.
Right.
I mean, in the Christian gospel, in Matthew 28, there is what's called the Great Commission, you know, go out and spread the word so that all may be saved. A fear that we might feel unknowledgeable about our own religion, a fear that we will offend others because of our religious belief and the way it may contradict theirs. How did those fears play out? Did you find those? These are fears that perhaps the folks at ICJS were anticipating might happen. Did it in fact, did they come to the fore to some degree?
No, I don't think they did, because we, instead of running away from our fears, we confronted our fears. And when I say we confronted, we started to talk about our differences that we had. And I think sometimes when you're, you know, you're trying to bridge the gap between yourself and someone that you have, you know, differences with or fear, you have to put that fear on the table. You have to say, hey, I do not understand a Muslim woman's role in Islam. And then we can start to explain those things. Okay, I do not understand the Trinity. What does that mean? Then we can explain those things. In Judaism, I don't understand, you know, why you wear a yarmulke, why, just those small things that someone may just take for granted, other people don't understand. So when you start to have those conversations, you can bridge those gaps. I learned from Dr. Mark Gopin, and he talked about the Jewish tradition of chesed. And that's really showing love to someone. And it's really not really necessarily loving thy enemy, but extending an olive branch towards someone that may have had a difference with you. And I see those things in practice all the time around our city, but just to see him put a name to it was awesome. Right now, if I can for a moment, right now we're seeing that where Councilwoman Ricky Spector was attacked, and she survived a very brutal attack by two young men. And I believe they were two African American young men.
But and they were kids.
They were kids. 13, I'm sorry, they were
13,
men.
13, 14 years
13
old.
13 and 14. Yeah, I teach them every day. But instead of her just hiding away from it, she was a survivor. You saw her wounds, but she also understood the wounds of those young black boys that are dealing with a lot of wounds in this city. And she embraced their family. And so even though she was wronged by them, she also understood that those young men were wrong every single day and that she had to, you know, confront that herself. And so I see her trying to bridge those gaps. And so we talked a lot about that, that true love is not just showing love to who's your immediate neighbor, but to those that you have no reason to find any sort of common ground with, but you do in an attempt to improve our society.
We have a phone call from Lauren in Baltimore. Lauren, welcome to Midday with Karim Amin, Tracy Guy Decker, and Terrell Williams. Thanks for your call.
Hi. I'm calling in. I got to participate in one Imagining Justice. Unfortunately, I didn't get to participate in all four because of different conflicts, but I was in Kareem's group, which was really great. And I also know Tracy because I've been participating in a monthly discussion group on racism and bias and justice at Baltimore Hebrew Congregation. And I just wanted to share why I and others participate in these events. So many people spend a lot of time and energy talking about how they aren't racist, they aren't biased, they aren't anti-Semitic or homophobic. And I think that growing up in this society and being surrounded, you know, the media growing up and seeing the crime and how it was portrayed in Baltimore and just being surrounded in a racist, biased society, that it is my job to confront any personal bias that I have and to look at it in the face and then to also see, you know, what I can do to have other people confront their own biases so that we can have a place, a world, and a city that is safe for all people.
Yeah, I mean, examination of the other is important, but examination of the self is important as well, isn't it? Yeah. And so, Lauren, it sounds like you found it to be a very productive exercise.
I did. It was really useful just hearing from other people's perspectives and being more aware of what it is like for other people.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call, Lauren.
And thanks for coming out.
I appreciate it. Yeah, and thanks for coming out to the session. So there were four of these. So Terrell Williams, the first was kind of a get-to-know-you session, and you sort of laid some ground rules, and you talked about, the difference between dialogue and debate.
Yes.
That's fascinating. I mean,
yes.
How did you parse those out?
Well, I think if you want to really understand where someone else is, it requires listening. And I think sometimes, especially conversations, political conversations and religious conversations are sometimes very, very heated. So we had to create a place where people felt comfortable to be honest and say what they need to say. And it was very important for us to not as much participate in the dialogue, but participate in making certain that people can say what they need to say freely. And I think that's the difference between a dialogue. We're not trying to proselytize. We're not trying to get people on our side. We're trying to hear you. Just say, what do you think about X? How do you feel about a Dorothy Day when she talks about hunger? Do you feel like your religious faith calls on you to do something? You know, there were several people. I mean, Dr. Mark Gopin said, This thing called MISFA, which talks about the justice in being. I mean, that's the one thing that stuck with me. Justice is a way of being. It doesn't matter who the person is next to you or in front of you. Justice calls on us to do something when we think there is something wrong. Or Dr. Franklin, who talks about the revelation of value. You know, sort of our personal responsibility to embrace justice, and when something happens, participate in the Freddie Gray saga. Take your place. You know, get in and make a decision. Don't stand on the side. I think Tracy said sometimes we have this. Some of us can afford the benefit of just sitting back watching, while others of us have to participate in this struggle every single day. What would it mean for every American to feel that I have to participate in this thing called democracy when my African brother is hurting or when the female next to me is hurting? Do I have a responsibility not only as a religious American, but just as an American that have come here for justice.
Yeah, and
how do we do that?
And creating that space, Tracy Guy Decker, is not easy because, when we do confront our own implicit biases, mm-hmm. our own, what we were told, exactly. what our mamas and daddies told us when we were little kids, I mean, that stuff gets ingrained. But the difference between having a dialogue with someone when you're listening and you're open to his or her ideas and debating that other person when every time she or he makes a statement, you're looking for the way to counter it, you know.
Right.
Okay, well, here's why that's wrong. You
right.
know? Because I want to win this debate. I want to, I guess, ultimately convert you to my way of thinking. Without consensus, if that's not in fact the thing, if empathy is really the goal here, to just mm-hmm. really sort of understand the mm-hmm. other, it is interesting to realize just how difficult that is. I mean, empathy. Sounds like a good thing, but it's tough.
It is really tough. One of the things that it's really tough because it's not natural. Our society does not teach us to do that. It teaches us to debate. It teaches us to wait for our turn to talk, which is different than actually listening to the other person. Mm-hmm. And it you just said it exactly, Tom. We're sort of saying that this is why you're wrong. That's the way we're taught to have a conversation. That's not a conversation. That's a debate. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we talked about when we were discussing Najiba Said's talk is that a lot of times
she was one of the scholars.
Correct.
One of the three
she
scholars.
Was the
so it was
Muslim.
Mark Gopin, Robert Franklin, and Najiba Said,
mm-hmm.
who gave the Jewish, the Christian, and the Islamic perspective on justice. These were talks that took place earlier in the year, preceding the community conversations mm-hmm. that you all had starting in September.
Correct. And the community leaders, so Terrell, Kareem, and I, and mm-hmm. 24 other people, mm-hmm. we actually had the opportunity to have workshops with each of those scholars, mm-hmm. who are scholar activists, each of them. And one of the things that we as community leaders talked about after Dr. Said's talk was we talked about pity and empathy and the difference mm-hmm. between the two, right? And so a lot of times we say, well, you should have empathy for that person. But what we mean or what we hear is you should take pity on that person. And pity is not the same as empathy. In pity, there's clearly a mismatched balance of power,
mm-hmm.
right?
And the powerful is
the one who's
is
doing
the
pitying.
Is the one who can give, who can
right.
dispense pity.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
And so we talked about how even the words that we use, like we might say empathy and mean pity, or we might say charity and mean pity.
Mm-hmm.
And pity, though, it's not actually getting us very far, mm-hmm. right? And it's hard. It really, in the same way that confronting our biases is hard, because it's something that it's baked in to the way that we interact with the world. And when we start to say, well, wait, the way I interact with the world maybe isn't the best way, it triggers a shame, mm-hmm. which often translates into anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how dare you say that I'm racist? How dare you say that whatever bias it is that mm-hmm. one has been accused of? And that's something that we have to work. We have to work in ourselves, but also when we're trying mm-hmm. to encourage others to have empathy, to have these conversations that are not debates,
mm-hmm.
figuring out how to navigate what is a really difficult thing for the other person.
It's a powerful piece. It's a powerful piece. But we have to take that anger that Tracy was talking about and turn it into action. And that really was the crux of our conversation. What do we do with these feelings? What do I do with my biases and with my prejudice, which we all have? We may not always admit it or even wear it on our sleeves, but what do we do with these biases and how do we move on? We talked a little bit about the election, and I think it really, for me, it really motivated me to say, okay, these are the differences that we have in our country. How are we going to bridge these gaps to move forward? And that was a lot of the conversation that we had at the table. I remember right after the election when we talked about Dorothy Day and all of her social action and
she's
social justice.
The founder of the Catholic worker movement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Talks about the deserving and the undeserving poor,
that's
saying
right.
that
that's
distinction
right.
is stupid, and that, you know,
exactly.
if you're poor, you are deserving of help, and it's incumbent upon all of us who value justice to simply help.
Right.
And ask questions later.
Exactly.
Help first, ask questions
ask
later.
Ask questions later. And as a devout Catholic, she often challenged not only herself, but also the church. And so in one arena, she was actually pushing for Catholics to go out and work, but also challenging herself and challenging her leadership to move forward. And we all have to do that within our sphere and do it in a brave way as Christians, as Muslims, and as Jewish people, challenging our leadership to say, hey, we have some real issues that are right outside the door. My mosque is literally, that I grew up in, at Masjid As-Safar on North Avenue, is two blocks from where Ground Zero was on Pennsylvania and North Avenue. So literally, the plight of justice and injustice was literally brought to the doorstep of my mosque. And so I had to step outside. Many of my friends, we had to step outside and do that. And so we also had to challenge our leadership and say, hey, you guys may want to stay here and talk, but we have to hit these streets because our babies are out here crying. And our babies don't have one color or one religion. I mean, they're all of ours, you know, so.
Kareem Amin is here along with Terrell Williams and Tracy Guy Decker. They were three of the community leaders who facilitated discussions from the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies series of community conversations on the subject of imagining justice in Baltimore. Our phone number here on Midday in this edition of Living Questions is 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go back to the phones. Alan in Baltimore, you were part of these conversations. Thanks for your call. What's on your mind today?
Yes, my name is Alan. I'm from Baltimore. I'm Jewish, and I want to talk about just briefly another component of the program that I think was very valuable, and it was certainly valuable to me, and that was it fostered the ability for us to develop new relationships. So, as I think it's been touched on, we sat at tables with 8 or 9 people at each table. Hopefully a third would be Jewish, a third would be Christian, and a third would be Muslims. And we would listen to a speaker. The speakers were the scholars from the Institute. And then we would spend the rest of the time, which was, I would say, about 45 minutes, discussing issues where we were talking about ourselves, we were talking about our feelings, and we were getting to know each other. Then the Institute encouraged all of us to try to get together with people at our tables outside of the program.
And did that happen with you, Alan? Did you keep up relationships with folks that you met?
I had lunch with one lady that was Muslim. I had dinner with one lady that was Muslim. I had lunch with two other Muslim ladies, and I had lunch with the Christian pastor.
And you expect that that will continue?
Of my table.
Do you expect that that will continue, you know, in the coming months and years? I mean, are these folks are going to become friends?
It will positively continue, and one of the things that we talked about was when we could get together again so that the end of the program was not going to be the end of our relationships.
That's great.
And all three of you are nodding your head that this is one of the things that did happen, that you simply were put in a place where you met folks who you wouldn't have any other reason to
Absolutely.
Interact with.
Or
to
thank
to,
you
to
so
to
much.
Yeah. Thank you for your call, Alan. I appreciate it. Tracy Guy Decker, Terrell Williams, and Kareem Amin are three of the community leaders who facilitated the ICJS series of community conversations on the subject of imagining justice in Baltimore. You're listening to Living Questions here on Midday. We are producing this monthly series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. More on imagining justice in Baltimore when we come back from a quick break. Join us before we take that break. We want to do one other thing, but our phone number when we come back, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So before we do take a break, on Mondays here on Midday, it is our practice now to read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We are indebted to a researcher named Ellen Worthing, who's been compiling a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the past 15 years. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides, which they've been compiling since 2007. As of today, 308 people have been the victims of a homicide in our city. Hundreds more have been victims of non-fatal shootings. 9 people were the victims of a homicide in Baltimore City last week. They are Gregory Riddick, who was 26 years old, Ricardo Grimes, age 37, Anthony McDuffie, age 42, Robert Prince, age 48. Deontay McKnight, age 21. A man who has yet to be identified, who was 31 years old. Malcolm Webb, age 22. James Hergett, age 83. And Brandon Lee, he was 27 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Midday. If you've just joining us now, we're talking about Imagining Justice in Baltimore. I'm Tom Hall. Imagining Justice was the theme of four community conversations that took place over the last 4 months, sponsored by the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. ICJS is based in Towson. They promote interreligious tolerance and religious literacy, and they partner with us here on Midday every month for this, our Living Questions series, in which we think about the role that religion can and should play in the public sphere. My guests are three of the 25 community leaders who were engaged by the ICJS to help lead these community conversations. They come from three different faith traditions. Tracy Guy Decker is the associate director at the Jewish Museum in Baltimore. Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. That organization includes a number of Christian pastors and congregations as members. We should also mention that Temple Oheb Shalom is also a member of BUILD. Karim Amin is the president of the Muslim Social Services Agency, a nonprofit provides resources to underserved residents in Baltimore. In the cataclysmic violence that we suffered in the spring of 2015, more than 200 local businesses were damaged, 15 buildings and 144 cars were set on fire, and perhaps even more important, the tragedy of longstanding racial and economic inequality was placed front and center in the public discourse about what led to that violence. The ICJS community conversations were developed in response to that violence, which has become known as the uprising. If you'd like to be part of our conversation today, our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go back to the phones. Kevin in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Terrell Williams, Tracy Guy Decker, and Karim Amin. Thanks for your call.
Hi, Tom. It's Kevin Lowery from Choral Arts, and I want to tell you, every time I listen to your show, it's like going to rehearsal.
Well, that could be a good thing or a bad thing. I appreciate that, Kevin, but what's on your mind in terms of Imagining Justice?
Well, I was wondering if the guests in their deliberations, their meetings that they had, I haven't really have a hard time with the Freddie Gray incident, because part of it is I don't think he was a really good role model, and I think that I can learn a lot from, you know, my own privilege and my own racism that I own and deal with every day. I think all of us do, but I just honestly don't think that Freddie Gray is a great role model.
Well, was there anybody who's suggesting Mr. Gray himself and in the way he conducted his life had to be a role model? I mean, do you have that understanding of Mr. Gray? Kevin?
I guess I see him as a role model regardless of who, and maybe it was just a flashpoint. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology.
I mean, do you consider yourself a role model? Is everybody just sort of automatically a role model? And if so, for whom are they role models?
Well, I try to be a role model by living my life as best as I know how to live it. You know, I don't know if that's what qualifies as a role model.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your call, Kevin. So, Terrell Williams, I mean, when Mr. Gray was arrested by the police, died in police custody, it's still quite it's at least legally ambiguous as to what happened to him. None of the officers who were indicted in his death ended up being convicted of a crime, although clearly he was healthy and alive before he was arrested, and he was dead after he was arrested about a week later. And people did immediately go to the way Mr. Gray was leading his life, the fact that he was lead poisoned, the fact that he was involved in the drug trade, at least to a certain extent, the fact that he was, had not pursued his education, and they went after the victim in this case to a certain extent. What's your response to comments like Kevin's, for example?
Well, I think it's easier for us to go to an individual versus a system. Dr. Gopin talked about, these different things that happen.
That's Mark Gopin, who's one of the leaders who gave a talk prior to these community.
Absolutely. And also Dr. Saheed, pretty much said the same kind of thing. It is these systems that create some of the violence and other things that we see. They even talked about the symbols. When I see the flag, I see opportunity. I don't see patriotism. I see opportunity because inside of that flag, there's great hope for African Americans. Inside the Constitution, there is hope for Americans. That flag does not say to me, I am free to be me. I am free to be open and I'll be judged as an American. It says, that flag to me says, I'll be judged how the person who comes to me, who has more power than me, judge me. It is not determined. It is not something that's prescribed. I've never been incarcerated. I've never had issues legally. But I can say to you, I've been arrested by the police quite a few times. I've been beat up quite a few times. Mm-hmm. And I say to people like Kevin, look at the system and not the individual. The individual is a byproduct of the system in which he must exist in. And Dr. Gopin really, really crystallized that for me, that I can no longer sit back and just blame an individual for a system that we exist in. We have a law and order system. So the question for me has to be, when I see the police, what does the police represent for me? For me, it not only represents safety, it represents fear. Because I understand that if I don't get the right officer, the one that wants to serve and protect me, a part of my article was an accident I had earlier this year on January 4th. And my
it was
car
a car accident. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Car accident. Totally total. I am laying across my seat. And I got four officers who are standing in front of me, and not one officer said, how are you doing? Not one officer helped me. All of them stood on the side and had conversations about what they did on the weekend. I don't think other Americans would have that kind of experience. At least I deserved a call to the hospital.
Absolutely.
At least I deserved an ambulance call. Uh-huh. I got none of that.
Of course.
If I could, as the one white person sort of on this panel, right? I think it's...
And now speaking for all white people, ladies and gentlemen, Tracy Guy Decker. Take it away, Trace.
I think it's the impulse that I think Kevin is pointing to has been called respectability politics, but it's what we talk about when we talk about the fact that Black folks have to do twice as much in order to get half as far, right? If it had been if Freddie Gray had been a white man, even with all of the same exact same life, so the same role model, like we wouldn't be having this conversation. Like, he doesn't need to be a model citizen in order to expect that when the police arrest him, he does not end up dead. And I think that's something that we all as a society need to just accept. And I'm saying that as the white person on the panel, because I think sometimes it takes white people saying it for other white people to hear it.
Absolutely.
And I think also what Kevin is really alluded to without even knowing it, he's really pointing towards the empathy gap that we have here in our society. Dr. Saheed talked a lot about the empathy gap, which exists in so many different ways.
Another one of the scholars who preceded the community conversation.
Absolutely. And she's a Muslim woman with, parents who traveled here, to other places. And so she talked a lot about what that empathy gap means, and what Kevin, as he was speaking, it just kind of brought up what she was speaking of, and the fact that we have to start to see people on the other side. We have to start to cross these gaps. And the whole issue with Freddie Gray, it wasn't so much about what his job was or what he did and the choices that he made. It was the choices that the Baltimore City Police Department made. It wasn't about his choices, it was about their choices, because at that particular time, he was in their custody.
That's right.
When he died. That is not an indictment on every single officer who risked their lives every single day, but there was an indictment on that particular situation. Now, no one was convicted, but however, he was killed, and no justice for him has not been done. So what that means is that we have to, and I would ask Kevin, if he's still listening, to please start to get to know the children in Freddie Gray's neighborhood and what in the effects that lead paint and lead poisoning has on our children. I teach right now, and I'm at Brims Lane Public Charter School. I love the school. We have a great administration and great teachers that are really trying to reinvest. And one thing that we talk about every day is having safety for yourself, having safety for others, and thinking about other people. And so we have to do that with our youth. And I will ask Kevin to do that with somebody in his family, to start to teach the youth in your family to look at the other side. Don't just immediately look at a story and say, because he was black and that he was a drug dealer, he must have deserved what he'd gotten.
That's right.
Because the issue isn't whether or not what he was doing was wrong. As an American, he had a right to be arrested and to be tried for the crime that he was accused of committing, not the police serving as judge and executioner.
And can I just add also, as we talk about that empathic piece, that think about the young man who killed the 9 people in the church.
That's right.
And how do we talk about him? Mm. And I know everything about Freddie Gray.
This is Dylan Roof in Charleston, South
look
Carolina.
And that's what we talk about. That's what Dr. Gopin and Dr. Saeed was talking about. These systems that we create that make people think things. So we think that young man who killed those 9 people were sick, but we think Freddie Gray was a thug.
That's right.
And it may or may not be. But the question is, what does our system do? It's not about the individual. It is about the police system. It really doesn't matter to me if other people want to get to know me or not. But in order to be an American, I have to be able to count on systems that protect all of us. And if they don't protect all of us, they really don't protect none of us. So as long as we have those differences based on race, we're always constantly fighting an unjust system, which I consistently say, you can't blame the victim when the system is so big, I can't move it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me bring the subject very quickly back to religion as we just finish up here. This is an email from Nate who says, as an atheist, I'm fine with the concept of religion, but I think that all of them will in some way warp justice. All religions will warp justice. He says, I work for a nonprofit and I volunteer my time, and I do so because it's right and everyone deserves to be treated fairly. It's also highly unlikely that most injustice issues stem from some religion. It's highly likely, it is likely that most injustice issues stem from some religious philosophy. So as we examine this, we have to examine the biases that religion itself, we got about 5 seconds to finish up.
What's his name again?
His name is Nate.
Nate, I appreciate you sharing that. But just don't ever take away my right to believe what I want to believe, and I will never take away your right.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I appreciate all of you coming in and being part of this conversation. Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Tracy Guy Decker is the associate director of the Jewish Museum in Baltimore. Karim Amin, the president of Muslim Social Services Agency, a nonprofit that provides resources to underserved residents in Baltimore. They were all part of the Imagining Justice in Baltimore community conversations that took place over the last 4 months, sponsored by the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. This has been another edition of Living Questions, a monthly feature here on Midday. We're producing this series in conjunction with the ICJS. You can listen to this conversation and all of the discussions in our Living Questions series online. Come on over to wipr.org/livingquestions. Thanks to The Diz for supplying lunch for our guests today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. They're open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, what's hot and what's not on TV. Bridget Armstrong and Jamila Kremple join me for Tube Talk. We'll hear about what they're watching and hear from you about your favorite shows. Until then, for the entire Midday team, I'm Tom Hall. We appreciate your listening. Have a great day.